You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Yo, I come from a crack in the ground, a hole in the wall, a dog in the crack in the round, the smoke is raw. Streets like a bullet in cancer, it'll swallow you up, or eat you from the inside, and hide you up. And every day like a test, you know life got rules, and it's sorta like checkers and chess. I want to school and take the lesson.
There are three colors on our flag, and I'm brothers. One red, one black, and there's one green.
In the mid-60s, with the rise of black consciousness here in America, in particular black power, and the aesthetic of black is beautiful, people realized that this was indeed the essential message of Garvey. It's as if in the 60s, Garvey's time had come.
The study of things black became a maximum pursuit by many of us, and Garvey was one of the major people that we looked at because of the realization that he has touched so many of us, whether we are from the Caribbean or from Africa or from the northern part of the United States or the southern part of the United States. We realized that in our families we had people who were Garveyites. This was an organization of uplifting black people. This was an organization that had a dream of a united Africa. This was an organization that had a dream of fighting white supremacy.
By the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, even if the name Marcus Garvey drops out, the fact is that black nationalism, all aspects of black nationalism, in some ways, is touched by Garvey's legacy. You know, the idea that of African redemption, the idea of black pride and pride in oneself, the idea of a revolution in the mind, that you have to change the way black people think in order to move forward to make any kind of revolution, that is the Garvey legacy.
Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, August 19, 2009. August 17th was the birthday of Marcus Garvey. Some background there. We do that every year, never wanting his name written out of history. Any thoughts on Marcus Garvey, you can send them through. Point I always make about why Garvey was successful in Harlem in particular was because of the high level of West Indian immigrant population. Now, all my Caucasian viewers and listeners, don't worry. You can get in like Holly Buds. I'm gonna ease this back. I don't wanna lose any of my white Slavic males in Alaska. What is going on in Jamaica with same-sex dancing? Let's get at it.
Ever since the earth slowed down, police and road boy, them in a showdown. Them a search round the compound. You know a man and a wee clown. Find a little piece of land and a plot me home ground. So tell the youth them not to take
feeling. Okay, Jamaica Gleaner, one of the very best newspapers. You need to read that if you don't. Go to blackelectorate.com. This story is up. Come on, Collie. Maybe it's the herbs. Same-sex dancing. What's up with that? Here we go. Keisha Shakespeare Blackmore. says dancing has been a major part of the Jamaican culture. In times past, when you went to a party, men and women danced as couples. But nowadays on the party scene, you find that more and more men prefer to dance in groups together on one side of the room while women gyrate with one another elsewhere on the same dance floor. This trend is rather puzzling to those who still hold traditional views about dancing. Some people cannot comprehend why men would prefer to dance by themselves while women would rub up against each other as opposed to dropping legs together the old-fashioned way. Is this gay? The growing practice has given rise to much discussion. It is believed that there is more to it than meets the eye. It leads some to question whether those engaging in the new habit are gay. Melissa Williams says, as a society, we are very hypocritical because we see two men dancing in a sexual manner. We may even want to beat them up. But if two women do the same thing, it is more readily accepted. And if you all experience this, we should also beat the women who dance with each other. I'm reading from the Jamaica Gleaner. There are many lesbians out there, but we can't be sure if these dancing partners are lesbians or just girls having fun. It is wrong, and I have a serious problem with it, says Williams. Billy Black, on the other hand, does not have a problem with women dancing with each other. He says if the girls dancing together in a sexually suggestive manner are good looking, it's okay. I blame the pink shirt, scarf-wearing men who dance with each other, leaving women to turn to dancing with their friends, says Black. Though Black has no qualms about females gyrating with each other, he has major hiccups when it comes to men doing the same. I believe they are all gay, and it's just wrong, he adds. Sandra James concurs. She says men dancing with men is a big no-no. I don't condone it, nor do I agree with men dancing together. I strongly disapprove of it. Says James. She says that occasionally, women dance with women very innocently, but now they have taken it to another level. When one girl bends over another and dances very close to her in a sexually suggestive manner, it is obviously or absolutely disgusting. I hate to see it. Plus, these days, it seems as if they want to force their lifestyle onto others. Are you all experiencing this? I mean, when this song comes on, is it heterogeneous or homogeneous?
Well, guess who's back? And I got the fresh rap like Dragon Stout. Here to put it all back.
She further points out that if they are lesbians, she wants no part in it and believes they should stay in their own little private parties. The question then is, do you see something wrong with men dancing with men and women dancing with women? If you have an opinion on this, let me know. Let me catch up on your posts. I think Joseph from Brooklyn had left something for me. Joseph from Brooklyn earlier on, he said, "Peace, Cedric, so many hot topics. I don't know where to begin. Shout out and thanks to Eleazar from Brooklyn for the info from last week. I have found How to Eat to Live Parts 1 and 2 online and will digest starting today. Shark Week is what The Apprentice should have been if Donald Trump was a better businessman. Come on, Shark Tank. I will be tuning in on Sundays. Let's go back to the beginning. Michael Vick was the victim of selective prosecution by the federal government. The crimes his people caught cases for were worse than anything that Vick personally did. His name was Brightest, so he took the L. We had an informant involved with Michael Vick, right? An informant? Snitch, right? Janine from Hartford, Connecticut, she said, I also watched the Mike Tyson documentary and it was awesome. I received a bootleg copy about 3 months ago from a friend and I watched it with my sociology class. They loved it. Tears. Yep, I was tearing up. when Mike Tyson described his relationship and the impact that Custom Model had on him. Rod from Culver City, California is complaining about Goldman Sachs. He's got a family member, a cousin who's a human. I don't want to say that on air. Rod from Culver City, California has family members that may weaken his revolutionary credentials. They are employed by Goldman Sachs. Any of you all same-sex dancers out there, let me know. My mother, you know, used to dance with her girlfriends. There was nothing alternative lifestyle about it. But I guess now it's different, huh? Jimi Hendrix and Woodstock, 40th anniversary. Did you all, anyone hear Jimi Hendrix live at Woodstock before? Rod, California, Culver City. Is that Jimi Hendrix your cup of tea? I forgot to do my hourly intro with the minister and Jimi Hendrix. This is Woodstock.
So we decided to change the whole thing around and call it Gypsy Sun and Rainbows. For short, it's nothing but a band of gypsies. We have Billy Cox playing bass and, from Nashville, Tennessee. We have Larry.
Go tell somebody. I'm pumping Jimi Hendrix live from Woodstock for a little bit.
We got Juma playing congas over there.
Any comments on the same-sex dancing in Jamaica?
Granny Goose, excuse me, I'm Mitch Mitchell on drums. And then we got Jerry Velez on congos too. You're doing a loop whistle. What do you wear?
I got a rare video clip of Jimi Hendrix in a minute.
Thank you. I have mine. Thank you very much. Well, you give us about a minute and a half to tune up, okay? Like, we only had about two rehearsals, so let's do nothing but primary rhythm.
Some of you may have been at Woodstock. I don't know. You let me know. I'll play the Mike Tyson audio before I get out of here. Maybe I'll ride out to that. No show till September 9th. I'm going to take a couple weeks off. Labor Day is the excuse. Jimmy, give me something for real at Woodstock. Actual fun. Okay, here we go. Got some audio. Here's Jimi Hendrix being interviewed in Harlem. Jimi Hendrix in Harlem.
Anything you want to say? Yeah, I can hardly wait till the gig comes because I'm more comfortable with the guitar in front of people. Yeah, but this whole thing is under the benefit of UVA, and we hope to do some more gigs for it, you know, some more benefits.
You didn't know Jimi Hendrix came to Harlem.
What we're trying to stress also is, like, music should be done outside in a festival type of way, just like they do it anywhere else. And, like, if they can have more gigs like this in Harlem, you know, you can play outside, say, for instance, 3 days. At the fourth day, you play half the day outside, for instance, and maybe the other time in the Apollo, you know, four shows or whatever, you know. Because a lot of kids from the ghetto or whatever you want to call it, you know, don't have enough money to travel across the country to see these different festivals, what they call festivals. I mean, $7 is a lot of money, you know. So I think more groups that are supposed to be considered heavy groups should contribute more to this cause.
Can we ask you what your thoughts may be after White Lake?
Yeah, well, I was pretty tired. You know, I was tired. Very tired, and it was a success for the simple fact that there was one of the largest gathering of people, you know, and a musical sense of it, you know, and it could have been arranged a little more, you know, a little more tighter, but it was complete success though compared to all the other festivals that everybody tried to knock here and there, you know. I like to see the same thing happen and see some kind of chartered bus thing come from different areas of town, you know. Some kind of, because I like for everybody to see these type of festivals, how everybody mixed together. You wouldn't believe it, you really wouldn't.
Do you think that anything significant was stated by this gathering? Or do you think
it just seems to me that,
pardon?
Oh yeah, that's true. It just seems to me that music has a lot of influence on a lot of young people today. You know, politics are getting, well, I don't know. You know how they get it. You know, a cat that talk on TV and a cat in Mississippi, a farmer in Mississippi, can't barely understand him except when he says America, you know. So then he's going to vote for him. But through music, it's all true, either true or false, you know. And like such a large gathering of people with music, it shows that music must mean something.
Well, do you think this is going to have an influence on future festivals or the music show?
Well, the idea of nonviolence. And the idea of when your attendance is over the thing, well, you should let everybody else in free. Yeah, that idea, yeah. And the idea of people really listening to music over the sky, you know, in such a large body. Everybody thinks that something's going to go haywire or something. That's always brought on by the police, always, you know, because we played.
You say that this is a success, but there's 300,000 people. Isn't that pretty large for to really to be a success?
It sure is, and I'm glad it is a success.
Why did you close the Star Spangled
Banner? Oh, because we're all Americans, you know, we're all Americans, aren't we? When it was written then, it was played in a very, very beautiful, what they call beautiful state, you know. It's nice, inspiring, you know, your heart throbs and you say, great, I'm American. But nowadays when we play it, we don't play it to take away all this greatness that America's supposed to have, but we play it the way the air is in America today. The air is slightly static, isn't it?
What is your comment on drug use at the Walkout Festival?
I don't know. Well, some people believe that they have to, you know, do this or do that to get into the music. I don't know. I don't have no opinions at all. Different strokes for different folks. That's all I can say. Sly and the Family Stone, I think, said that.
How do you think the benefit you're going to do in Harlem will compare to the Woodstock
Fest? Okay, they asked him, how do you think the benefit you're going to do in Harlem will compare to Woodstock? Again. A lot of powerful people were afraid of Jimi Hendrix connecting with black people and the Black Power movement. That's documented for another show. Again, the question is, how will your show in Harlem compare to what you just did at Woodstock, which is what we're playing right here? All right, Jimmy, go ahead, answer it.
Oh, well, I don't know, I might be living a long time, but I don't go by comparisons. I just go by the truthness or the falseness of the whole thing, the intentions of whatever it might be. Forget about comparing. That's where we make our biggest mistake, is trying to put our ego against another person's, you know. That's why I can't find out who's better, B.B. King or Segovia. You know what I mean? They're both masters. They're both kings.
Mr. Hendrix, a lot of people found the Wallkill Assembly startling, even surprising. What would you say to them?
Well, from now on, a lot of people are going to find a whole lot of things 10 times more startling, 10 times more surprising. It all depends on where their head's at. Let's pretend that a flying saucer's coming down. Instead of checking it out or really seeing what it's about, they're going to try to shoot it down, first of all. In other words, an unknown thing. So this is very unknown to the people who are surprised, isn't it? But they should try to get into it, see what it's really about. It's like smoking and cancer. It got so bad and out of hand, they had to put it on TV, didn't they? Find out the yes and no's, what's the actual link up, you know. It's the same thing with these festivals and these gatherings. I hope it happens in art, I hope it happens in, you know, community sports and whatever, you know.
Why the United Block Association?
Pardon?
Why do you pick the United Block Association?
You have to start, man. You know, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it?
Do you think that this kind of assembly marks a change in American culture?
Well, this has been changes marked even before the times of King, Dr. Luther King, you know. There's been a whole lot of changes, but some people, after the excitement or the backwash or the change slows down, they say, yeah, that was groovy. Let's see, what else can we feast upon now, you know? One of the things, there's a whole lot of changes happening, but now it's time for all these changes to connect, to showing that it's leading up to love, peace, and harmony for anybody, and a chance for anybody.
You taught yourself to play.
Well, yeah, you know, people taught me to play, man. The movement of people and the way they carry on from this or that, you know. The whole idea of it. Anybody can do anything they want to do. It's up to themselves, you know, with the right intentions.
Jimi Hendrix, a master at handling the media, very dismissive of them, reading right into the motivation of their question.
Have you heard about my baby?
Look into the band of Gypsies. Rod from California, he said, I was a teenager at the time of Woodstock, fresh out of college, living in Cali, but I didn't go to the concert. Jimi Hendrix came out of the Chitlin circuit in the South, playing for the likes of Ray Charles and other heavyweight big band leaders, dead at 27, tragic, and Janis Joplin could sing. This is Hear My Trainer Coming, Jimi Hendrix on the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program.
Tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
All right, let me take you back a little bit. Some of you wanted, well, I don't want to say what it stands for, but some of you want some Purple Haze. Purple Haze at Woodstock.
Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Excuse me while I kiss this girl.
Shark Tank. Some of y'all need some help. It's called Shark Tank. Sundays on ABC. This is the program where entrepreneurs get in front of investors and they have to persuade them. The investors can negotiate amongst themselves or strike a deal individually with the entrepreneur. It's my new favorite show. The T.O. show was second. I thought that the black supermodel, she was nice. And I miss Tiny and Toya altogether. We'll be right back. wants Voodoo Child, let me give you Voodoo Child, Woodstock, Jimi Hendrix. Got another comment. Hendrix at Woodstock is significant because it exemplified the ideals of togetherness and equality that the show represented. He got on stage and showed he was equally, if not more, entertaining and talented than his peers. I see it as the ultimate statement of race. While it can be argued that he tried to live in a white world, so many things about his character and his personality were black to the core and contradicted. His perfectionism, self-sufficiency, holding people to their beliefs, his love for the blues made him soulful. Rod from California says Hendrix was a very intelligent guy, untouched by the so-called structure of an education as defined by academia. I agree. You know, Michael Jackson, important, of course, looking at the universal acceptance. Jimi Hendrix's life also worth studying if you want to see the universal acceptance of a black figure. In music.
Watchman, Cedric Muhammad on the Black Coffee Channel.
You know, I couldn't raise up till I hit my favorite Jimmy joint. We'll have to rerun this hourly intro. Send in your final comments. I will be leaving on time. Ramadan coming up for all the Muslims. I'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad on the Black Coffee Channel.
Straight up Joker to the beam. There's too much confusion.
If you are a guitar hater and you still don't like this song, there's something wrong with you. I think Eminem said it. Hip-hop fans can learn to like the guitar. It just depends on how you use it. Hold on.
You are tuned in to the Watchman.
I gotta put the fire trucks
on the Black Coffee Channel.
I don't think we've ever put the fire trucks on a rock song.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Straight up Joker to the beam. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
I don't want to lose my Christian audience. David played the harp. That's a stringed instrument. The chief musician of the Lord. Rod Guignard, Culver City, California, says this was and always will be the baddest rock song ever made. I love this.
Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Maybe maybe Lil Wayne could remake this. Oh nah, it's blasphemy. Perish the thought.
Ending whackness. Ending whackness. Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Get your air guitars out. I'm playing mine. Stuff right there. Jimi Hendrix, he didn't play that at Woodstock from what I can remember. Let me give you the Shark Tank intro. Some of you trying to figure out what's going on with this program. This is my new favorite show, Shark Tank ABC. This is the intro. Sunday night, watch this. You can send me emails even over the break. We can talk about it.
Powerful self-made investors worth billions. Tonight, they will make or break the dreams of hopeful entrepreneurs. In the tank, the sharks are ready to invest using their own money, but only for the right person with the right idea.
Do you want to be rich or not?
I do want to be rich.
Well, let's get focused on that, buddy.
As of right now, you're nobody to everybody.
No one can stop me from what I want to accomplish.
In these tough economic times, the sharks are the last chance for many entrepreneurs to get the financial backing they desperately need.
It was always emotional for me.
Money has no soul. It doesn't care.
I'll make you a better offer. I'll give you $1 million.
Who are the sharks? Kevin O'Leary knows how to make money. He started a software business in his basement, which he eventually sold for $3.2 billion. Barbara Corcoran, this fiery real estate mogul turned a $1,000 loan into a real estate empire worth hundreds of millions in the shark-filled city of Manhattan. Kevin Harrington is the king of infomercials. His genius marketing of products such as the Obama coin and the rock and roll stepper have amassed billions of dollars in sales. Damon John literally turned rags to riches with his clothing brand FUBU, which has grossed over $6 billion in worldwide retail sales to date. And Robert Herjavec, who sold his internet companies for over $350 million. Now this self-made technology magnate is a venture capitalist and runs his own software company. If the sharks hear a good idea, they'll fight each other for a piece of it.
Robert just offered you nothing and told you to pound sand.
No, I didn't. I didn't do that.
I gave him a shot at the brass ring. You're giving him nothing.
You've just seen a guy screw his partners. That's what happened here.
But first, the entrepreneurs must convince the sharks to invest the full amount they're asking for, or they'll walk away with nothing.
What would I pay for that?
$950.
Stop the madness. Are you out of your mind?
Yes.
Ouch. I'm out.
I'm out also.
He's out. I'm out.
Well, that's what you can expect. Sunday night, Shark Tank. I'm going to mosey out. Let me read a couple more comments. Cam from Paterson, New Jersey says, it said your show promotes belief in oneself. And if you read Jimi Hendrix's biography, you know that he traveled the world to make his dream of playing guitar come true. But said, I never hear you mention his drummer, Buddy Miles. What's up with that? I think we have mentioned Buddy Miles, haven't we? Was it Billy Paul? I got to get that right. I think you're right. We got to give props to Buddy Miles. Maybe we'll do a segment on Max Roach and Buddy Miles. And Kevin from Virginia Beach wants me to remind the audience of the minister's mastery of Mendelssohn's violin concerto in E minor, violin brilliance. Minister Farrakhan also not afraid of string instruments. I think we'll let Mike Tyson take us out. If you tear up on this, I don't blame you. He's talking about the impact that Customato had on his life. We'll be back in 2 weeks, I think September 9th. Blessed Ramadan to the Muslims. And, you know, even if you're not Muslim, you may want to just try to fast 1 or 2 days. Whenever I go on break, something major happens. We'll see if this repeats itself. Mike, make us tear up.
So I went over there, and I wanted to box him. He hit me in the stomach. I never felt the feeling. I just felt like I died. His brain was still plexus. I went down. I said, I just knew I was going to beat this little white man. No way he was going to be. I thought it was a tough one. He hit me in the solar plexus. I never felt. I just went down. I jumped back up to show I was tough, but I couldn't feel anything. It's my whole blood sugar, everything stopped. I said, what? I couldn't talk. I couldn't breathe. I don't know what the hell happened. He told me to walk around. Because he didn't want, because I tried to show that I was tough, but he knew I was hurt, so he said, walk it off. So I walked around, and after we finished boxing, I said, can you teach me some more of that, sir? He told me, you don't want to learn. And he said, everybody said they want to learn. So I had to continue to prove to him that I wanted to learn by conducting my behavior well. I became a nice guy. I talked to people nice. I became a gentleman. And then eventually my grades got better, and then he started teaching me how to box. And once he started teaching me how to box, he realized I was getting close to going parole to go back to Brooklyn. He said, I don't want you to go back to Brooklyn because you're going to get in trouble and get killed or go to jail. I want you to go to this man. This guy could take you to the next level. And at that time, I was probably 1980. I'm at Customato.
You got to score points when you get in touch. So score points when you're doing the amateur.
I didn't trust him because I didn't trust anybody but Bobby Stewart at that particular time. And it was like he was transferring me over to another person, and I didn't trust anybody but him. And then he was like giving me to this guy. I said, what the heck is going on here? And I couldn't understand it. But he said, just trust this man. Trust this man.
I don't trust anybody in general. I don't like people to know me at all. And I just recently trust him because the same much I trust him, I guess he trusts me. And he trusts me a lot. So. But no one really knows Mike Tyson. Nobody's really friendly with Mike Tyson.
Why?
Except Customato.
Customato would watch me for like, he didn't let me box. He would just talk to me for like 2 or 3 weeks about fighting and the psychology of fighting. And what fighting was truly about, fighting wasn't nothing physical, it was all spiritual. And he was saying, if you don't have the spiritual warrior in you, you'll never be a good fighter. I don't care how big or strong you are.
Let me run my mouth. This man taught Mike that he was God. Keep listening.
He explained that to me.
Your mind is not in your work. Your mind is not in your work. There's something distracting you.
As time was going on, this guy would just kept saying these he just kept saying these great things about us. I said, this guy, I didn't know this guy was queer. He just kept saying great things. He said, man, you're a great fighter. He just kept saying, you're the greatest. You do splendid. You look great. You're looking better. He just kept giving me compliments and compliments about everything I did. I said, what's the role of this guy? I never had the slightest idea. He was just building up my confidence. But as time went on, I understood what he was doing. As I became an adult, I understood he was building up my confidence. And we started fighting. I had my first amateur fight, and I was so scared of my first amateur fight. I went downstairs and said, I'm going to go to the store. It was in the Bronx, New York. I said, I'm going to the store to my trainer. And I went downstairs, and I said, man, I should get on this training. It's never come back. I wanted to get on the training and just leave. I was so scared. I didn't want to fight anybody. It's just such a different dynamic than fighting somebody in the ring than it is fighting somebody in the street. And I never thought I could fight somebody. Even after all the training, I was... You mean it's totally intimidating fighting somebody in the ring. But I put myself together with the discipline I learned from Cus, and I went in the ring and I scored a third round knockout. I don't know, but after the first, it was too nerve-wracking fighting, I thought at first. So I didn't really want to fight, really. So I was staying at Cus' house. You know, I come from a really poverty-stricken area, and when I came to live with Cus, they live in a 14-room Victorian mansion. And I first come here, I said, wow, I could rob these white guys, these white motherfuckers. They ain't hip. Not thinking, I'm not knowing this guy been around the world a bunch of times. I never knew he was like me. He was from a bad neighborhood. He was a street kid like me. And then one day he used to just say, listen, you have the chance to change your life, your family's life. You could be something very special. Don't you want to be champion? You could be champion of the world. And I didn't pay no attention to it. He said, really? You could be champion of the world. You could devastate the world. No man can take you with you. You just got to believe it. I looked at this guy, and then I started thinking. I said, this guy's really crazy. That's what I said, this guy's crazy. He said, you do what I tell you to do, and if it doesn't work, then you could leave. So I said, okay, bet. So I did everything he told me to do, and I won every championship from the amateur championship. Oh, I won all the championships. I'm gonna cry. So I won every championship that he told me, because he told me what to do. And I started believing in this old man. I stopped being a little thief. I used to go back to New York and rob people and then come back upstate and hide out. Then I stopped doing all that. I changed my whole life. I said, I'm gonna stick to this boxing shit.
That's it, there you go. Now you got, again. Who's the last guy to stop? Time, very good, that's fine.
I turned my whole life over to boxing. I turned into a complete animal. I turned into a disciplinarian. This guy had me clean my room. This guy brainwashed me so much that if he told me to bite, I bite. If he told me anything, I was like his dog. He broke me down. He broke me down and rebuilt me. I was just like a total different person.
Mostly it just changed my life because he helped me to deal with people. I know how to deal with people now. Before, I couldn't talk to people. I always want to be alone. And now I learned how to deal with anyone. I could talk to anyone, even about their problems. And it's like a father and son relationship. You know, even though he is my manager and trainer, sometimes I forget that because of the way we are. The first day he met me, he took me in his house. He didn't even know me.
I can say honestly, I have a very deep affection for him. I do. To me, he's my boy. He's with me. I often say to him, you know, I owe you a lot, and he doesn't know what I mean, but I'm going to tell him now what I mean. If he weren't here, I probably wouldn't be alive today. The fact that he is here and doing what he's doing and doing as well as he's doing and improving as he has gives me the motivation and interest to stay alive, because I believe that a person dies when they no longer wants to live. But I have a reason with Mike here. And he gives me the motivation. I will stay alive, and I will watch him become a success. Because I will not leave until that happens.